appointed a subcommittee of Senator John Burns and myself to take a testimony on this. Senator John Burns has been called down to carry a bill on the floor, so you're now before a subcommittee of one. And as I understand, these amendments that are proposed are limited to Section 9 of the Uniform Code. Is that correct?
That's not exactly correct. There are some changes in Article 1, primarily definitional changes, and there is one change in Article 5, but I think there are no major changes aside from definitional
changes. I understand this grows out of the fact that they have the uniform laws, they have a continuing editing system where people send stuff in to a common place where problems have arisen, and this accumulates over a period of time, and then they come out with a proposed amendment to try to go to each state and do it. What do they call that process? You know, it's a commentary or something. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not quite sure. The process is that over the period of 10 years, the Commissioners on Uniform State Laws have submitted, as you suggested, the amendments to the American Law Institute, which is basically the overseeing body for this. They have made the proposed amendment or changed the bill in conformity with amendments which they thought were wise or necessary, and it has come back in the form of a uniform law, basically, or amendments to a uniform law.
There is a common place where people, if I understand, they have kind of a reporter system or something.
That's true. There are reporters, in fact, who oversee the bill during the period in which the American Law Institute is not in session, and they have drafted the amendments. That's correct.
One thing we have, the problem with a lot of the uniform laws in the state of Oregon, which I think is not true in the uniform code, but others, they are drawn so much for areas that the impact of that cases in that area of the law is so much greater than it is in the state of Oregon. And we found the landlord-tenant bill, the one brought here, just didn't find Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York, but it just didn't fit any place in Oregon. And I don't see the great need for uniform laws and so far as landlord-tenants or commercial transactions where your financial institutions are dealing interstate. There is. Only practitioner, of course, that we find what these bills do is that we have to associate somebody with a big firm every time that we file one of those forms, so we won't be guilty of malpractice. We're either looking for doing it or have time to put in on it. But
Or hire a young law student. That's at least we're teaching that to them now, I hope.
Small practitioner doesn't get enough of this to hiring a person to handle. You can do what you want to do. You can generalize over this statement. You can emphasize the parts. You can read it all to me. I will read the statement. And I'm saying this not to shorten up the time, my time, because I don't care. The stuff is on the floor of the Senate down there. I got one bill to carry probably an hour from now. So you can proceed as you want to. Now, the remarks you make here will be helpful to the senator that's carrying this bill on the floor of the Senate to explain it to the other senators.
Well, Senator Burns, really two things happened at the committee meeting, the last committee meeting. The thicker document, which you have, is a series of really technical analyses to the bill, and I don't propose to read those. The bill is, as you know, complex, and there are a number of changes, and a professor was visiting at the University of Oregon, and I prepared that last spring. I have been back through it, and I think it's up to date as near as I can tell. And I certainly wouldn't take anybody's time by reading it, but it anyone who carries the bill can use that as some assistance. My statement, I can read, I think I really wouldn't supplement it that much, and perhaps it's just as well if the committee members read it. And I would have summarized it anyway. I do have one thing which was raised at the last meeting and which I have spent the last day or so doing. I was asked to go by the through the bill line by line because it came to the committee in bad shape, apparently. And I was simply asked to go through and see that it is in correct form. And I have found a few errors, and either with Mr. DeWinter or with you, I would like to go through and note them so that we don't run afoul of technical problems on the floor, if you wouldn't mind.
Are there a large amount of those?
No, there aren't a large number. I'm sorry that I don't have them written out, but I do have them noted in my margin.
Well,
I can
just,
tell you rapidly what they are.
Refer to page number 11.
Yes, I will. Page number 11, line 16. The last word in the line, or, may have been put there for stylistic reasons in Oregon. It is not in the Uniform Act, and I don't think it's necessary.
That should be deleted.
Okay. That's right. Page, it sounds like I'm nitpicking, but I didn't nitpick. Page 16, line 22, the new L should be, I believe, a small L.
Can you hold 1 second?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to clear read
down. Looks like, sure you can't handle it alone?
This is Professor Dawson.
We haven't been formally. Now, what the hell are you doing up there at the head of the table?
I'm the chairman of the subcommittee.
Looks like a pretty powerful subcommittee.
Two Burns boys.
That's right. I move we adjourn.
You can't do that to me.
Uh-huh.
Not on Memorial Day.
Oh, whatever you want.
Okay. I just want to go through the technical changes which I discovered in the last day or so.
Where's
mistakes, I should say.
Where's the bill?
It's 143.
It's in my bill book, which is down in my hall.
Don't you have your bill here?
No.
Did you have your book?
Oh, no, I have the book down. Is it the book, John?
No, it's the
Olivan's book. That's right.
If you get you another copy
no.
of the bill, if you want to use it.
Yeah, give me another copy of the bill. I'm tired.
No.
This calendar?
No.
Fine.
Thank
you, John. Well, it's okay, isn't it?
There's no major problem. I found a few things which, and they may just amount really to typos more than anything else.
Well, what is the problem, generally, has the source code been amended, the UCC?
That's right. These are amendments to the bill which Oregon adopted about 6 years ago. And they are almost without question a series of amendments where it was unclear before what the law was. There are a couple of major amendments in the sense that it clarifies some things which nobody had been quite able to assume before. But they really are clarifying amendments.
Well, now, you teach what, bills and notes?
Commercial law, secure transactions, sales, commercial paper. This is all secure transactions.
And how did you get involved in this? Did you work with the commissioners on your...
The Oregon State Board asked me last spring, along with another man who was teaching last spring at the University of Oregon, to prepare an analysis of the changes of the amendments. And then I was asked to come up and testify on the bill in support of the bill. They asked us because we taught in that area to do the analysis.
Who was the other guy?
Pardon? Pardon me?
Who was the other?
Richard Smith, who was visiting from the University of North Carolina.
Okay, why don't you go ahead, Professor? I'm sorry.
Okay. Page 16, line 22. And this is the capital L. Should be a small L.
What is it?
I gotta go down and pay my bill.
Well, I'll just go through this with him.
Go through it and mark it.
You know, there's that open bottle bill is on.
No.
And it passed the House. And that's a lousy damn bill. And the Oregonian editorialized against it. Only had 8 no votes in the House, but I figured if I wasn't there, it'd be a no vote.
Well, I'm not gonna be there. It's the bill just before mine.
Yeah. What's yours?
2737.
What's that one?
It shouldn't have any trouble.
Counties, what do you do to the counties?
It lets the counties use, in their discretion, some of their highway funds for other than county roads. They can find roads that are important to public interest in. Bring up the standards, cross street or something.
Right. I don't think you need me down on that.
No.
Okay, now, the line, what is it? It's line 16.
Page 20. No, line 22, page 16.
What? Yeah.
I'm simply going through the changes Senator Hoyt asked for as to whether I could certify that the bill is in proper shape. If you want me to just give them to John, that's fine. There were a few mistakes in the bill.
Well, what's wrong on line 22?
The L should be a small L.
Oh, all right. Okay. Okay.
Where'd you
that's
find
sure
it?
What's the next one?
Page 18, line 6.
Yeah.
It says person. It should be personal.
Okay.
Page 19, line 14.
Yeah.
72.7230 should be .7250.
It broadens that out a little bit, huh?
Well, actually, that's defining the whole article on sales. I'm sure it's a typo, as a matter of fact, but it would create some problems.
Okay.
Page 20, line 1.
Yeah.
It's 83.680 instead of 860. It's an inversion.
.680. Okay.
Page 22, line 24.
All right.
Again, a typo. It's without.
Well, with. Oh, okay. Okay.
Page 24, line 17.
Yeah.
The first A in the line should be deleted. It's not in the uniform bill.
Uh-huh. Renewal of perfection of.
Renewal of perfection of, that's correct.
Okay.
Page 30, line 34.
Okay.
Note should be not. Page 32, line 27.
Yeah.
Or, the first or in the sentence should be of.
And time of filing or filing. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Page 35, line 29.
Okay.
After this section at the end of the line, there should be a comma. Or there is in the Uniform Act, I should say.
Of this section, comma, a security interest.
It's notwithstanding paragraph A of subsection 4 of this section, but otherwise subject to sections 4 and 5 of this section, comma, a security interest in fixtures is subordinate.
All right.
All right. I don't know what the effect of this bill in prior law is, but on page 36, beginning on line 22,
There
is a substantial mistake. This is actually just a restatement of prior law. Beginning after as and or, striking the words beginning with and any defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
It should read, which accrues before the account debtor receives notification of the assignment.
Before the account debtor?
Before the account debtor receives notification of the assignment.
Or claim, is that right?
No. I'm sorry, all of those words should be stricken after as and or.
Well, then, how, then is that the end of the...
Then that's period after the word assignment that I...
Well, then, so after as and or on line 22, everything else is stricken, huh?
That's right.
And that's just rewording of existing law.
That is what existing law says.
Well, then, does that conform with the commercial code?
That's right. It conforms with both the Uniform Act and the present Oregon law. That
okay.
is a typo in the bill.
A misprint
in the bill.
Okay.
Line 11.
On what page?
I'm sorry. Page 36, line 11. I'm backing up for
you.
Yeah. Diminution should not have an A in it.
Yeah. Okay.
Page 37, yeah. Line 31.
Yeah.
Where it says count clerk, it should be county clerk.
Yeah. God, they sure did make a lot of typographical
errors. Savage mistakes. Now, let me make a comment beginning on page 43. And I will raise this as an example, subsection 5 at the bottom of the page,
yeah.
beginning on line 26. There is stated in that section and many of the sections following a uniform fee. And then in addition, there are blanks left for an additional fee where certain additional acts by the recording clerk or the county recorder are required. Now, I assume that someone will fill those amounts in. It is left blank in the Uniform Act because it's up to the state to select the amount.
Do we have legislation seeking to fill that in, John?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, do we presently in our Chapter 71 or wherever it is, we don't have specific fees in there, do we?
Chapter 79.
Or whatever.
Excuse me a minute, I have it.
I think it's a $3 fee now, isn't it?
4030. I don't see. Yes, it is a $3 fee. What this act is doing at this point, and it's really just a minor change, is that they are providing for a standard fee if a standard form filing is used. And if something other than a standard form filing is used, or additional copies have to be filed, for instance, there is an overage fee. For instance, this is the standard form question. There is no comparable provision in present 79 for non-standard filings, and I do not know what the state of Oregon might select as a fee. I simply didn't know.
Now, these are filings where you file your
security
financing statement with the Secretary of State.
That's right. There is a prescribed standard form, which I think is used in Oregon as well, but there is no fee for a non-standard form in the present Oregon Article 9.
Yeah. Want me to check with the Secretary of State and see what...
I would think that it would be simple enough to do. I don't know what the amounts are.
Okay. And the rest of that's okay?
Yes. The same problem arises... Oh, pardon me. I'm running ahead of myself. Page 45, line 5. Before the word termination, there should be the word the letter A.
File such a termination
statement. That's correct.
Okay.
paragraph 3, beginning on line 22 on page 45, again, the question of what the non-uniform fee should be in that case.
Okay.
Page 46, both in lines 4 and 5, and lines 27 and 28, non-uniform fees.
Okay.
Page 47, lines 18 and 19, non-uniform fees.
Okay.
Okay, and I believe that that is all the questions I have technically.
Now, what are the substantive?
Would you like me to read my statement? Now, those are the only problems in the bill. The substantive provisions are all correct. The amendments, as they're stated in the bill, are uniform. They will conform to uniform law.
Then what was your statement?
My statement is the one which I offered to you
last
time and did not read. I will read it if you...
No, because I read it, scanned it. What you're saying is that the bill makes our commercial code conform to the amendments to the Uniform Commercial Code, and which would put our UCC into complete conformity with the ALI UCC.
That's
right.
Right.
Now, and all your statement does is just explain what the amendments are for purposes of clarifying what it is, right?
My statement is designed to pick out what I consider to be the major changes in the bill. There are, of course, substantial changes in a number of sections, and they are all covered in this technical document,
right,
which I also gave out last time. And what I tried to do in my statement is simply highlight the major changes and explain the reason for them.
Well, I think you should give your statement then to the whole committee, because we're satisfied that the amendments which these make it comply technically. Then I think the whole committee, as a matter of policy, is going to have to make sure that we want. So I think you should give your statement to the full committee. I'm going to simply move to that we adopt the technical amendments that you've outlined to me and to reserve the question of the fee to for you to work out and put in the bill, John. And I don't think we necessarily need, unless the committee makes policy changes on unless we decide to deviate from the uniform as a matter of policy after hearing your explanation, I don't think we need this engrossed. It's too big a bill to engross. It can just be hand amended, simply enough, I think. So, why don't we wait, if you'll bear with us, and we'll be up here just as soon as we adjourn, and why don't we wait and have your policy statement given to the full committee?
Fine.
I mean, I've read it, and as far as I'm concerned, we should just go ahead and adopt it in toto. Maybe Betty would be willing just to let me report that I'm in agreement with the whole thing and not have to go through this for fear that somebody might start nitpicking it and we'll be here for an hour.
Well,
excuse
me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just had the impression at the last meeting was that the committee wasn't particularly interested in the policy statement, but I may have understood that. I'm perfectly willing to wait and discuss the bill in the substance with them.
Just be a minute. It'll just be, shouldn't be more.
Then in section 3 on the second line, in section 3, I'd like to take out or touching of sexual organs, and in subsection 3 of section 3, take out the comma and touching of sexual organs. I think that's unconstitutional. I think that just the holding of hands, a hand could be considered a sexual organ. And I think it's too broad. And actually, the other sexual conduct is defined in 167.02. And read 167.02.
Sexual conduct in 167.02 is defined as means sexual intercourse or deviant sexual intercourse.
Is there any objection to taking that language out? Touching a sexual organ?
Well, do you think it's unconstitutional any more so than perhaps some of the other?
Yeah, I do. I think the rest of it is pretty good. I think it stands up.
I would.
And touching a sexual organ is so darn hard. Hair, hands.
Oh, I know, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really stretching point, Betty.
Madam Chairman? I think this reference to this 167.002 is incorrect. That's the definition of sexual conduct in the prostitution laws. Now, in section 1 of this mock-up, they say the sections 2 through 7 are to be added to 167.060 to 167.095, which are the obscenity and related offenses. So,
then that top right should be created. It says on line 4 that it's amending 002, and this section 3 is getting at live sex act.
Yes, but this amending 002 has to do with creating a definition of sexual contact and placing that in the prostitution statutes, which are over on, well, in section 5 and section 6 of the mock-up are the prostitution statutes. And what they're doing there is creating a new term, sexual conduct, and placing that in 167.002. That would allow, say, the prosecution of someone who is engaging in masturbation for a fee, and make that bring that within the prostitution statutes. I think that the sexual conduct that should be in this particular provision, live public shows, is defined in 167.060, which there's no need to.
Which says
sexual conduct means human masturbation, sexual intercourse, or any touching of the genitals, pubic areas, or buttocks of the human male or female, or the breasts of the female, whether alone.
All right. Then on line 20, it should read 006.
I don't think there's any necessity to have any. Simply, I think you can delete after sexual conduct all of this as defined language, since these are made a part of 167.060, 167.095, and the definitions of 167.060 will be applicable to your all of the provisions that are placed within those statutes.
Well, I mean, it's usual to make reference to where the definition is, and the definition is in 167.06, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, then in 006, if 006 is incorporated, the phrase or touching of sexual organs is not really needed.
No, it's not.
We're talking about line 19, meaning or touching of sexual organs, and line 26.
So do we have the language for subsection 4167.002 before?
Well, he's just read 006, which replaces touching. Read 006.
060 reads as follows. Sexual conduct means human masturbation, sexual intercourse, or any touching of the genitals, pubic areas, or buttocks of the human male or female, or the breasts of the female, whether alone or between members of the same or opposite sex, or between humans and animals in an act of apparent sexual stimulation or gratification.
Was that part 740, was it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there any discussion on my motion to delete 19 and 26 or touching of sexual organs on 19 and comma touching of sexual organs on 26 and replacing in line 20, making it 167.060, and on line 27, 060.
Do you have to change the same language on the next page?
That's not the same. Sexual contact.
Oh, I see.
Sexual conduct.
Shouldn't up on line 8, where it's made a part of ORS 167.060, shouldn't that be starting with 167.002?
No, because
Section 5 is in there.
I can change around those references to make it applicable, but there are two distinct separate sets of statutes, one for your prostitution, the other
it
for
a
senator.
It is put in down in line 31.
Well, I know, and Section 5 is dealing with 002, and I just wonder whether Section 1, which says 2 to 7, which would include 5, are added to and made a part of ORS 16060.
Well,
seems to be
see, Live Public Show is really a new section. 002 is prostitution, and the live... And
that's
the
where we define sexual contact, though, in there. It's not defined any other place, is it?
No, it's not.
And that's...
should be in there.
Well, we've incorporated that by leaving in the statutory reference, but actually this section is going to become a new section apart from the prostitution section, but the massage parlors will be a part of the prostitution section.
Which means we have to have a sub 5 of Section 5.
Mm-hmm. Is there any objection to the amendment?
Well, you think that we're going to do everything that we've been talking about.
I think that Section 1 would have to be amended so that we put in 167.060 to 167.095 only those provisions that you want, and those would be those provisions excluding the prostitution sections. There would be no problem doing that.
You're going to put in sub 5 into that, then?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Is that okay, then? Okay, it's so ordered.
Does anybody know what John Burns' hang-up is about some other part of the statute that he thinks he...
Yeah, he thinks that 163, public indecency, that the thrust of this
he had some feeling, didn't he, that the language in here was making it more, even more restrictive than in these amendments.
What's
163,
John?
He's citing 163.465, which is... reads as follows. A person commits the crime of public indecency if, while in or in view of a public place, he performs A, an act of sexual intercourse, or B, an act of deviant sexual intercourse, or C, an act of exposing his genitals with the intent of arousing the sexual desire of himself or another person. Then it classifies public indecency as a Class A misdemeanor.
Now, what section of law is that?
Public relations.
Well,
I think that would cover the Lyme 6 Act, but I don't think it comes from the
South. It doesn't, because they're not bringing those cases. They're bringing them under the prostitution statutes in Portland and not under public decency statutes. And as I remember the testimony, it was a question of payment that they could never prove.
Yeah.
What Portland is doing is bringing actions against these live public shows under this public indecency statute.
Well,
they're trying to get at them through that mechanism.
Now, George, we have this loose bill here, in Grossen bill, Illinois, and George also wanted Section 8 on page 4 adopted into this.
In the engrossed bill, this was in the bill on the floor this morning, but it just in this mock-up it was left out.
Is there a discussion on adopting Section 8 in the mock-up?
In other words, the local
government could not make it more efficient. They can't now under existing law, under Senate Bill 40. But this would allow the
local authority shall enact any ordinance, rules, or regulations inconsistent with the provisions thereof, which means that they cannot.
They could make it stronger.
It looks like that's kind of rigid, George. It couldn't go either way, could it?
Well, the present law is in conflict with, and Haas, Carl thought, I think, and others, that by putting inconsistent meant that you could make it stronger, that this was not in violation of what we have.
Well, I don't know, as a matter of fact, but it just strikes me that that's what we do.
Well, can anybody, if this were passed by the legislature, could some local jurisdiction now ignore it?
No, I don't think they could ignore it, but I think they could make it stronger. If we pass this, but under existing law, they cannot.
I don't think inconsistent means stronger.
Well, let's come up with some language that would do it, because apparently whoever drew up 708, this was the reason they put this in this language, and it was there this morning. Now, if you think that it would not allow them, I think when you say inconsistent, that I don't think that would prevent them from making anything.
I don't want to argue with you,
because I don't know. Well, I'm right. So I'm willing to try to spell it out even plainer, because I think this is very important.
Do you want John to draft?
If John could come up with some language which would allow local authority to pass ordinances dealing with this, it would make it more stringent than, because under existing law, they can't do anything.
Who drafted this particular language? You know, that was the intent of the original section we had in the law. Did you draft it, John, or did?
No, I didn't. When Senate Bill 708, as printed, did not have this in it. This came from Legislative Council, and I believe it was on the amendments which were combined with your amendments, which were combined with Mr. Haas's.
Well, if you don't know what we have, in other words, so the local authorities can legislate.
Do you want them to legislate to broaden the substantive provisions, or simply make the penalty more stringent?
Well, I think dealing with the whole thing, that as long as it's not weakening it, that they should have, if Portland or Beaverton or anyone wants to pass outlawing additional things, or even providing more stringent penalties, I think they should have this authority.
Here comes the judge.
Iconoclast.
No.
Keep going. You're getting close.
They don't have it in this dictionary.
Oh, come on. Yes,
I know the word.
He just doesn't know how to spell it.
It's probably consistent, and then they put it, look up consistent.
You want me to go to another portion of the box?
Statute.
Well, I think anything that spell it out, the local authorities can legislate on this more stringently.
Didn't find consistent.
You don't look under the case, Bob. Try C. let's amend the dictionary. we should amend that.
Maybe you're looking at it the way it's spelled in the bill. It's spelled wrong.
I gotta put my glasses on. What are you doing?
Here's contact.
You don't have to memorize the whole damn thing. Start in the middle of the book.
Well, you're too far when you get the contact.
Thanks a lot.
You said it. Especially when we pass this bill.
But S comes before T. So you got to back up.
Consider.
Ah, you get close.
Consideration?
Keep going.
Consecrate.
Yet.
Consent.
You're not far enough yet.
Consider?
No, keep going.
Aha! Assessing firmness or coherence.
Includeness?
Agreement with itself. Uniform throughout.
Well, I think John could come up with appropriate language that would allow them this authority.
No, I'm very pleased with what you're considering here.
There's something wrong with it.
I'll move it out. Do pass as amended.
Well, wait a minute. What are we going to do with
the what about the savings?
Well,
clause?
I think we just passed
the suggestion this morning.
The
let's have John check the criminal code and see if there is a general savings.
There is.
Clause.
I think there is.
Yeah.
I've seen it. Keith, I think we pass the idea and he'll come up with appropriate language. I don't mind if you want to wait and see it, actual language. Why?
Well, it's getting so late in session.
Yeah. I think.
Anybody in the room to take 103 off the table?
No, we're going to pass. George moves to pass on this bill. Well, he moves the amendments to 708.
Well, I'll go to Ivy members.
Ivy?
Aye.
Boy?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Madam Chairman? Aye. Senator Ivy moves 708 as amended to forward and pass. Court Gay Byrne.
I'll move to the floor. I'll move to the floor. Aye.
Ivers.
Aye.
Boy.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
The meeting
Madam
adjourned.
Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 103 be taken from the table.
What?
I move that Senate Bill 103 be taken from the table.
Second. you move that Senate Bill 103, you're moving to reconsider.
Oops.
Okay.
Can we discuss it?
Okay.
What's that mind? Yeah.
Well, I like 708 the way it was out there. I didn't think these amendments were necessary. If we're going to try to deal with everything, we got numerous Supreme Court decisions up there, and if we're going to go as far as we're going down 708, I think the Supreme Court decision will affect what we do, and we might go the whole way, and as we did in 103. Because I think
that's too far, and you know it's unconstitutional.
We don't know what Supreme Court's going to do. We don't know, and when we had 708 was on the floor today, I think it would fly in the face of any Supreme Court decision. I think these amendments now would put it in jeopardy, and if we're going to put a bill out there, it's going to be in jeopardy by the Supreme Court decision that would be coming down between now and the next session. I think we'll have the whole workshop. That's the reason.
What kind of logic is that?
I don't. Who knows whether it's unconstitutional or not, the amendments. Harl didn't think they were. I mean, the ones he prepared. So he's a good liberal Democrat. I'm willing to go with him.
Well, the purpose of the meeting was to consider 708
as
the
past. I vote aye on the motion.
Judge Fountain, we've been kind of discouraged with the deadline. We've had it for hearings times and nobody's come.
Well, I have to say that I'm probably as guilty as anybody, but I just didn't get up here, and I did finally write a letter, I think.
Yes,
and,
my master letter.
I do appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak today at this out of order, because I do have a heavy court calendar. And I'm Joseph B. Felton, Judge of the Circuit Court of Marion County, Department of Domestic Relations. And I'd just like to say that I would urge passage of House Bill 2051. I think it's a greatly needed legislation with the ever-increasing divorce rate and so many families that have step-parents, and which has resulted in an increase in custody controversies between the natural parents. And then a major factor in this problem is the mobility of the American people today. Statistically, we know that between 35 and 40 million Americans are living today in a different place than they were a year ago. People move around, they take take their families to other states, and then that means it creates problems of visitation. And I'd like to call your attention to Roebuck versus Roebuck in the Montana case, 508 Pacific 2nd, 1057, in which the father, who lives in Deschutes County in Bend, had the custody of the children, and he permitted them to go to Montana on a visit. They filed a proceeding up there, and the court up there gave the children to her. That meant that he had to go up there, of course, and defend it. But this is what is happening. You will recall, of course, that in Oregon for many years we had the case of Lorenz versus Royer, which said that unless the child was domiciled here, the court had no jurisdiction to go into what was the best interest and welfare of the child. The other line of cases, which starts with Bartlett versus Bartlett, held that if the child was domiciled here, you could go into the best interest and welfare of the child. As a matter of fact, and this is pointed out very well in the volume 7, it's 1971, volume 7, page 498, the Willamette Law Journal, which is a discussion of the legislation represented by this bill and what the situation is with respect to the conflict of laws in custody cases. And I think the preparatory note, which appears on page 171 through page 174 in the interim committee report on laws relating to children, this sets out and states better than I can, and I'm not going to take the time to go over the information there, but I respectfully suggest if you are interested, you can read it, and it points out what the problem is. We do need this legislation, I think, and it's going to become more so as on. Remembering, of course, that the Supreme Court in Hawkins versus Hawkins decided in December of 1972, overruled Lorenz versus Royer, and sets out some guidelines. But certainly this is a far cry from the guidelines that we need, and this is what House Bill 2051 does. And it's true, I think, that only one other state so far has adopted this uniform bill. I might say in passing that it's a well-drawn bill. It's had a lot of work done on it, as you can see, and I think prepared and developed by the the Commission on Uniform Laws. It's been approved by the Oregon State Bar and also the American Bar Association. And I think is certainly deserves consideration by this legislative session, and I would urge that a favorable action on the part of not only of the committee but the legislature itself. I think that's about all I have to say, Senator Brown.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Why?
Questions, Judge Felton.
Madam Chairman. Judge Felton, you mentioned about this being well drawn up. Have you had a chance to read it?
Yes, right? I've read it
from cover to cover. Yeah.
Yes, I. it's obvious that there's been a lot of work done on it, and I'm have some knowledge of the work that the Commission on Uniform Laws does, and they do a good job, and they spend a lot of time and research. And
but you have, to your own knowledge, this bill fits in with our present laws real well.
Well, it actually, what it does, it implements what the Supreme Court tried to set out in this recent case of Hawkins versus Hawkins, and I think it'll fit in with our and but it's true that only one other state has adopted it. I'm sure other states will, and whether they do or not, it's still going to be a big help to us. I've been in this, I'm on my 21st year in domestic relations, and I have many cases in this area, and they're the most frustrating cases you can get, and it's almost impossible to determine what the law is.
But would this be of any value to Oregon if our neighboring states didn't adopt it?
Oh yes, it would still be of value. I would urge even though the other states don't do it, but I'm just sure that eventually that the other states will.
Further questions? Thank you, Judge.
Thank you very much. Yes, and the Marion County Bench proposed amendment, which they have sent to you, to 379.
Okay.
How do you vote, George?
Yes or no?
Maybe. I'm sorry, I was here earlier and no one was here.
Oh, George, that is true.
Well, I've got witnesses out in the audience that I was here. No, sir, at 1 o'clock.
I walked in 1 minute after 1.
2 minutes. I went and looked at that clock, and it was 2 minutes after one, and then I left.
3 minutes after that.
You
well, I came back. Gee, at least I got back here.
Is that clock right? My watch is sure small.
That clock's right on the button.
I didn't say that. How about the sun?
Well,
what are we on?
Let's talk about 685. We passed that out, which was destruction of erection of arrest records if a person was not, if in the preliminary hearing probable cause was not found. Now, Dick had so much trouble getting his bill passed on arrest records. I wonder if it's worth the effort to try it.
Well, what is this doing?
His provided that if there were no conviction.
Well, it had to do with job applications. Well, and this has to do with sealing the record.
In the bill that passed previously, it applied to employers and employment agencies, saying that they could not inquire about a person's conviction record or base an employment decision, or excuse me, about a person's arrest record, or base their employment decision upon an arrest record. This particular bill is directed at public employees, and only in instances where somebody has been discharged after a preliminary hearing. And in those instances, the public employees must destroy the arrest records.
Anybody have any thoughts?
Well, I think it's a good where does it say public employees?
No, it means it requires them to destroy the records.
Oh, yeah.
That's all the bill does.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
After the judge finds that there's no sufficient cause to believe that they're guilty of a crime.
What's the official status of this now? Is it passed down the committee?
This particular bill? Yes, it was reported out with a due pass recommendation, then re-referred to the committee.
It was re-referred on the floor of the Senate?
Yes.
So we have to re-pass it if we're
going to do it. Who made the most re-refer?
Dick and I saw both bills coming up the same day and saw trouble, so we brought this one back.
I don't think so, no.
About 538.
This is the one. This is really the one that the Hallett made the tantrum on.
He won't do it
again. I'm not if I give him that present.
I guess we have. Do we have amendments?
538.
Madam Chairman, this is a bill that the committee requested that I investigate the possibility of repealing civil arrest statutes. A law student working in legislative council prepared a memo on this, which is in your packet under this particular bill. His recommendation is that not only the civil arrest statutes be repealed, but also the statutes relating to body executions. This is a situation, say, body execution where a person has received a judgment, he attempts to execute the judgment on the property of the person found at fault. And gets no satisfaction, and then moves against the person of moves against the person who against whom the judgment was rendered. This particular individual who researched the question approached Dean Hollis at the University of Oregon Law School, and it was his recommendation also that these two sets of statutes be repealed. In the memorandum, you'll also see that he talked with, I believe it was a circuit court judge in Lane County, as well as the sheriff's assistant in Lane County, and both stated that in their experience, which had been fairly long, I believe it was Judge Allen. In both of their experiences, they had seen these particular provisions used only once or twice, and I believe it was over a period of about 16 to 20 years. That appears on page 3, the second full paragraph down. The chief argument in opposition to civil arrest statutes is that they allow a private person to, with an affidavit, incarcerate somebody before there is any court hearing or court procedure. And basically the argument is that it does not provide sufficient procedural due process. In instances in which these statutes have been contested, in this state and in other states, they have not been ruled to be unconstitutional. But there has been, as this memo indicates, widespread criticism of this type of statute.
Well, it appeared to me that if you were able to serve a person with a summons, you have jurisdiction over jurisdiction of them anyway and get your judgment. If they have any property in the state, you'd be able to levy against them. If they haven't got any property, you're going to be out of luck anyway.
That's correct. And there are also statutes on the books aside and apart from the body execution statutes and the civil arrest statutes, which allow a judgment creditor, one, to bring in the person against whom the judgment was rendered to determine whether or not he has property that he is concealing in the state or is about to take it out of the state. You can also take in custody a person who may be thinking about leaving the state with property. And these statutes, as I say, are in addition to your body arrest and or your body execution and civil arrest statutes.
This repeals
them? This particular bill doesn't repeal them. It simply eliminates the discrimination or the distinction between women and men.
And do you have amendments prepared to repeal?
No, I don't. And the reason I don't is that if you repeal these two series of statutes, it's going to entail other amendments in other statutes, mainly housekeeping, which will have to be made. I would like to get the committee's feeling on this and then go forward from there.
We're looking at 538. What's the direction that
Well, my personal reaction, the same as John's, that I think that this type of legislation, I mean the civil arrest statutes, I think is an anomaly in this day and age, and I can't see any harm to our system of justice to totally get rid of it. I would think it'd be a good thing to.
What's the consensus
of the committee? Leave the bill
like it is, or direct John and to rob repealers and do the necessary. How long is it going to take?
I could have it ready by next Wednesday.
I'd like to see it repealed, but it's the Senate bill.
To do it by Monday.
what difference does that make?
He's not partisan.
Well, there's no sense putting a lot of work in on something if we're not going to get out of committee for another week.
Well, why don't we submit the pass the bill now, take the work over to the House, and then we have it in conference committee, and we'll be done in 2 minutes.
Do you have confidence that they'll do it?
No, but then how do I know we're going to do it?
John will get this done by Monday.
I could finish it by Monday at the earliest.
Some committee has already shut it down.
Why can't we repeal 29.520 with instructions that he include in that all the appropriate references? Would that do it? I don't know. John, would that do it? If we repeal this section here, just repeal it outright?
Just want to abolish it, huh, John? You're just against it.
Well, if you do a neat job, you really should get the others.
Well, that's, I'd be in favor of repealing it.
John?
You mean the whole thing? Chapter 29.
Well, direct John to prepare it.
I don't think we need civil arrest. I'd just draw up a simple statute which would repeal everything from 29.510 through 29.740. Is that right, John?
That's the civil arrest, and then the other recommendation is to repeal the body execution statutes, which are 23.080 to 23.090.
Well, you better check with Hector McPherson on that. He's an expert on bodies.
I vote with the lawyers.
Oh. Okay. 660.
I move it out due pass.
This is the one that Halleck appeared on.
This is the kind of bill I want to fully water, make sure that it's sanctified. I'm going to go someplace. I'd like it somewhere else.
What does this thing mean?
Well, it requires the private pension carriers to disclose the money that they're receiving and investing. It's the Ralph Nader bill of 73 session. It's a good bill.
What does that accomplish?
Well, there's an awful lot of money that goes into private pension funds.
There's $80 million.
Which the poor working stiff, he doesn't know where it goes. There's a lot of abuse.
This doesn't take care of the situation though, where the guy shuts down his plant and has all the benefits, or removes his plant, and the guy spent 30 years there and ends up with no benefits. It doesn't address itself.
I think it's a start toward that.
I mean, there's some proposal in the Congress dealing with this.
Yeah, so we're already 10 years from
now. Yeah, there is.
I've got a bill in.
That's the other bill is House Bill 3208, and it was referred to State and Federal Affairs with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. State and Federal Affairs in the House has not acted upon it yet.
Senator Burns has moved it out to pass. Is there discussion?
The bill really doesn't have anything to do with protect the vested rights or integrity of the fund. It just reports.
You
got
that bill?
I thought it was more than that. Unfortunately, I thought it was more. Well, let's get it out.
Discussion?
Madam Chairman, I might add that in your packet there's a letter from the Corporation Commissioner, Mr. Healy, and he suggests that if the bill is reported out due pass, he thinks that there should be some clarification whether or not a plan which is subject to this bill is also subject to the provisions of the securities laws. He says that it's his position that they would remain applicable, but thinks that there should be some clarification here. That letter is in your packet, and that recommendation is on page 2.
It doesn't matter. I just didn't have
to. Does this mean if we pass this bill that he's going to do more than he's doing now?
Section 15 is sure pretty broad.
I go die.
Kirk Caldwell. Hayburn.
Aye.
Hayburn.
Aye.
Ivern.
No.
Hoyt.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Smith is here.
Oh, Smith? Hello?
Roger.
Aye.
Now, what do we do about this letter from the... Do we have to do anything, John, to make help the Corporation Commissioner?
I think that he would like to see something in it simply clarifying it, but it's up to the committee what to do with it.
Well, I'd like to put all the steam in this we can do. Should have enough in memory.
Well, John, you can see if it needs any amendment.
Can we give you a proxy now to vote this thing out with the appropriate amendments to implement the Corporation Commissioner?
Yes,
the same time.
Is that right, Jay?
Yes.
And what are we doing? Are we combining them all into one?
Yes, Madam Chairman. The Mr. Johnson of the Parole Board has submitted some amendments to 379, which
is 379 going to be the vehicle?
I believe so. Yes. Okay. Which would, in effect, combine the provisions of 379, or it be a compromise proposal of 379, 385, and House Bill 2110. And we have, at a previous hearing, we had discussed the proposed compromise before the with the committee. And there is now one further.
Are you still at issue on the question of counsel?
We have, Mr. Johnson has submitted a memo and some proposed amendments with respect to counsel, particularly because of a recent United States Supreme Court case that does require appointment of counsel to indigent persons at parole revocation hearings in appropriate cases.
Is that contained in this?
That's contained in that, and I would concur with that proposed amendment with respect to counsel.
Al, are you in agreement with
him?
You're
going
to
miss me.
Yes, I am, Senator. I drafted the council amendments, which are really, as Mr. Johnson's memo says, a codification of the May 14th decision in Scarpelli versus Gagnon.
Is that subsection B?
Yes. If the committee would like to know, Scarpelli versus Gagnon said very helpfully that indigent should be received at state expense counsel on a case-by-case basis. They set out really, the opinion set out really two criteria. Now this is both at the preliminary hearing and before the board on the revocation. If the indigent requests, makes a colorable claim that he did not commit the violation, or a colorable claim that even though he committed the violation, there are special circumstances which should be considered and the revocation should not take place, and taking into consideration his capacity to express himself, the due process would require that he be appointed counsel to represent him at both the on-site preliminary and the revocation proceedings. In order to assure this, the court also went on to say that he should be notified of this right if he makes the request and the request is denied. The reasons for the denial of the request should be stated in the record and probably also stated in the summary of what they did, why they denied the request, and so on.
If we adopted these 3 pages of amendments to 379, 2 pages of amendments, would the bill be in change?
I'm not sure about the technical, the mechanism of putting it into shape.
You need to adopt, Senator. There's a letter of Mr. Johnson's of May 15th and a letter of May 30th. Those contain 2 sets of amendments, which my understanding incorporate the compromises between Mr. Pagel and the Board of Parole and Probation. If you'll start the May 15th letter, it is attached approximately 15 pages of amendments, which creates the compromise. The compromise provides for judicial review to go, instead of habeas corpus, directly to the Court of Appeals upon the agency record.
That's in your packet.
Yeah, it's this May 15 letter.
I'm glad you're taking care of me.
With Mr. Johnson's letter with the attached proposed amendments. Then there's a May 30th letter, which came today, with additional proposed amendments which incorporates the council representative.
Well, what you're saying is that if you go from the parole board directly to the Court of Appeals on the record.
On the record.
Puppies.
Wait, I don't have it, Harriet.
Wait, now, if we adopt these 2 sets of amendments, we're in business.
You're in business between these two. Now, there is one other I would like to mention here. There's a May 16th letter from the Circuit Court of Marion County, which also asks that you adopt an amendment providing that the public defender represent the parole, the revoked parolees in the Court of Appeals. The reason for this is this would cut down on the habeas corpus load that Marion County now bears. So really, you've got a package of three proposed amendments for you.
Do you have that in writing?
Yes, that should have been distributed to you in a letter of May 16th, headed Circuit Court of the State of Oregon, Marion County.
Well, what's the fiscal impact upon Babcock's budget?
This has been discussed, let me add to this. The same proposed amendment has been made by the Circuit Court of Marion County to Ways and Means on, based upon the judicial review of institutional disciplinary procedure. And that is being looked at for the fiscal impact of both parole and probation and institutional disciplinary proceedings. It's my understanding. I know it is. I can say this. I have heard from Babcock. Babcock has said that I have said, and I have said that Babcock has said that he could probably do it with one man, one additional man.
Questions? Did I understand you to say that these amendments conform to what you believe the Supreme Court decision held?
That one on the letter of May 30th, yes, Senator.
No more, no less. I'd agree.
And I think Vic would agree.
I have the letter of May 16th, but I don't have any to call it yet.
May 30th, we're talking.
No, I'm just talking about the very
now. No, I don't have any amendments from you.
I do. I have a copy, Senator. I think that 10 should have been sent to you. Because that's my
does somebody want to make a motion?
I move the amendment.
Three sets of amendments. One's under the cover letter of Mr. Johnson. One's from the Marion Circuit Court. Two from Mr. Johnson. Is that right?
Yes, Senator, that's correct.
Wow.
Is there discussion? Madam Chair, as long as they've all agreed on this, President, I think we ought to get it engrossed so we know we'll get a moving.
Do you support this, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, Senator, we support this.
All right. Well, then that makes it a good bill.
First call, Jay Byrne.
No.
Dave Burns.
Aye.
Ivan.
Aye.
Boyd.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye. I've had a long fight with the parole board going back a long time.
Well, don't take it out of this bill.
Okay.
Couldn't be very long. They just changed the composition.
Dick, instead of your motion to engross, we make a motion to pass it out, and then we'll check it once it's engrossed. If there's any problems,
these amendments are the new bill, then I think. Is that right?
That's correct.
What are we going to do about the fiscal implications?
Well,
if they could find $186,000 in my bill to permit cars or to take cars off the beaches.
Oh, come on, John.
May I make a comment?
Subcommittee 2 Ways and Means is hearing the parole board budget tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. This bill will not be directly before them, but I will present the bill to them and indicate what has occurred here and try to work out the budget implications of this with our general proposed budget. We're allowing for certain things that are increased financially in this bill. We're having a little trouble making financial estimates, however, because of no past experience.
Would you like us to ask legislative fiscal to do it?
I'm not sure I understand.
They wouldn't have any credit either, you're saying?
No. But they are hearing that Ways and Means are hearing our general budget, and this matter will be drawn into it, and they'll become aware of the possible fiscal implications that do arise out of this bill.
Well, Dick, will you make your motion?
Yes, I changed it to Ringwater.
Do pass as amended, and then we'll check it, and if there are any problems, then I'll go to school.
We're going to use 379 as the number.
Yes.
Yes, I told you.
The motion is passed 379 as amended. Discussion? Let's call the roll.
Avery?
Aye.
Avery?
Aye.
Ivern?
Aye.
Hoyt?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Will somebody move to table Senate Bill 379?
So moved.
Court call roll. That's one of the bills that's in court. Avery?
Aye.
Avery?
Aye.
Ivern?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
What about 2110?
2110, will somebody move to table that?
So moved.
Court call.
Do we have that?
Yeah.
Will you send a note to House Judiciary of Wyoming tables?
Okay.
Court call roll.
Aye.
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 Hoyt?
Aye.
Ivern?
Aye. Question.
Yes.
This provides, in effect, that in parole revocation hearings, the defendant, the prisoner, is entitled to be represented by counsel.
That's correct.
Now, are the parole revocation hearings presently a hearing of record? Because we're talking about going up to the Court of Appeals on the record. But when you have them now, are they recorded?
They are recorded with a tape recorder.
Okay, well now, when you talk to Ways and Means in connection with the budget, you're going to have something in mind concerning the cost of recording.
Right.
Whether by audio or shorthand. Now, the next question. Right now, they're not represented by a counsel. When they give this summary hearing before the board. I had a bill in 1967 to permit these guys the right to counsel at probation and parole revocation hearings. It was conveniently tabled. But right now, when the guy comes before you, he isn't represented, right?
He may be.
But
now, up until this Carpelli opinion,
yeah,
we allow retained counsel at the expense of the alleged parole violation.
I understand that. But not
right
at
this stage, what we do is we tell them, since this opinion, we tell them that if they're indigent, they may be represented by counsel and not at their expense. And we also tell them we do not have the power to appoint counsel, nor do we have any money. But if we deem the facts of the case appropriate, we will try to make available to them an attorney. And we have in mind a public defender's office in Portland or calling upon a legal aid office for service.
Well, if you use Babcock's office, that's general fund money. But if you go the regular court appointment route, it's the county that pays it.
I make a comment here. As the bill now stands, Babcock's office, the proposed amendment, is only used for judicial review of the action.
Well, then don't you need another legislative act to permit the board to appoint?
That's in this latest amendment.
And who's going to pay that? Is it going to be the county or is it going to be the state?
I would assume the state would pay it.
Well, then, all right.
The amendment says the state, I think.
Right, it says the state. And that will be brought to Ways and Means.
One other question, Madam Chairman, and that is in probation revocation hearings, which it used to be parole and probation revocation was in the same section. And I've been so far away from it that I haven't represented anybody recently in probation revocation hearings. But this only relates to parole revocation.
Correct. This relates only to parole revocation proceedings.
assume that the counties are paying, or the judges are appointing counsel on probation now. Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry you had to come so many times.
Well, maybe the board will last for another year or two if you do such a good job.
On 2051, it's been set for 3 hearings. Judge Felton appeared for 5 minutes today at 10 after 1. It's my feeling that we should take no further action if somebody is sufficiently interested to justify.
I move.
2051.
Okay, so we're going to pass now.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, is it in the slick book or the dull
book? The only book you got now. The rock book.
25.
Down. Madam Chairman, to the motion,
testify.
I think I made this motion once before. This came out of the Inter Committee from Juvenile Code. They studied it, they thought that everybody's involved in juvenile work, thought it was important. Judge Felton's testimony today really was a summary of what we learned during the interim. And to wit, that they're not the only one in the state, but the language in here is good and does support the Oregon law and proves it, and that somebody's got to make a start, and our statute will be better off in this area because of the passage.
Well, Dick, do you understand the bill?
Madam Chairman.
My amendment would be that you
Well, I just have to say that. It's an interstate co-op bill. I guess that's what I can say. Maybe you say a lot.
Further discussion?
Madam Chairman, I would be prepared to vote for this bill today. I'll send copies of it to the Designated Juvenile Court Matters in Ocean County. If they're favorable for the bill, I'll vote for it.
We have a letter from Gene Willis in favor of the
bill. Well, 3 judges.
Judge, you felt? I don't see.
On the back, I'd probably make a fool.
Well, of course, I'm in a horrible dilemma because both the chairman and Senator White served on the committee, but...
How many states have this bill?
One.
I have questions. Pardon? Well, my problem is I don't know what the legal impact will be. This is one of the worst areas of law that we have. The most expensive piece of litigation when you've got the people coming in, children are born to tree, and virtually kidnap the children one state, bring it to another, bring habeas corpus proceedings and everything else. It's very, very expensive. Tears families apart.
Did you hear Judge Felton?
I heard him, but I don't know what this does if we sit out here by ourselves with this law and more favorable treatment to foreign decrees and other states with ours and so forth. I'd like to make a phone call better and more.
We have 2219, the funding of legal aid by adding to the filing fees because federal money is going to be cut off. Is there anybody here on that? Would you come up, please? Would you state your name?
My name is Stephen Lowenstein.
Would you like to make a statement?
Bell?
2219.
I'd only like to say that it's a very interim measure. There's an automatic termination date, and it's very much needed money for a brief transition period until the National Legal Services Corporation comes into existence. and we hope to fund the full program that's been approved by the Oregon State Bar and formally approved by Governor McCall. It's only an interim measure to try to keep certain programs that are going at their current levels until other money can be secured.
Are you here with legal aid?
No, actually I work...
You work
No, I'm employed by the Oregon State Bar Committee on Legal Aid. It's a statewide committee to try to help support these programs in this difficult interim period.
Is the committee wish any questions of Mr. Moore?
There's no other way to finance this thing. This is a user's tax in reverse.
There's just no other way, Senator Hoyt. We've explored everything.
Why don't they take some of our increased bar dues?
Well,
how much money again are we talking about here?
We're talking about $60,000.
You know that I mentioned before that Simple Safe World doesn't have a general fund put it out. It probably cost more than admission.
But we've explored that, Senator, and they just can't do it right now. And this seemed to be the one way to.
If they take that $25 they're collecting from district attorney's appearance in the worst case, we can give it to them, we can have it.
Well, that would be delightful.
How much money is that? Did we pass that bill?
We sent it to Ways and Means.
Somebody sent it to Ways and Means.
It's $1 million, so.
The worst consumer legislation is a.
Sure.
It's terrible.
Well, it was passed as a revenue measure.
No,
I mean originally.
Oh.
$25. It was just a place to get $25.
But built in.
They're going to use it to buy cable.
If I need money on Ways and Means, I go down to lobby them. I don't know.
Why don't we pass a bill that takes Robert Stewart that money to fund this purpose. Why don't we go under this bill? Why can't we do it?
That's fraud.
What's wrong with that? Why don't we take
what's
the $60,000
out? The attorney being there when he's not there. I mean, even for this purpose.
Sure, that bill's a, you know that bill's there every single time of day up there.
Can we amend this bill and take that money out?
Let's put $60,000 out there. I so moved.
What'd you move?
Me too.
What'd you move?
Why don't we take and the deal on the attorney, the district attorney's deal, setting up a Ways and Means, it's probably going to die up there. Why don't we take a percentage of that money and apply it for this purpose?
And Senator Smith will send a bill to Ways and Means.
I'll try.
Oh, you were the.
We got to work it out with Senator Holster and Senator Moe.
Well, why? Well, I.
You forget where you were.
I guess he just spoke to speak to host and you speak to both.
I'd just like to say that it's a fairly emergency sort of situation in that the funds that will be cut as of June 30. And the House, this is a House bill and it's gone through the House with very few dissenting votes. And it's quite important, I think, that the money be available to keep these programs going, especially in the smaller
towns.
What's
going to be the impact on legal aid in this
country? If it doesn't pass, three of the legal aid programs, three of the six in the smaller counties, will cease to exist.
What do they consist of now?
They consist, well, the three are in Jackson County, that consists of a couple of Vista lawyers supported by a secretary there. And that will not be continued. Lynn County has a lawyer and a secretary, and Clackamas County has two lawyers and two secretaries. Now that may be able to limp along with one, I'm not certain. It depends what Clackamas County does with revenue sharing. There will be substantial cuts in several of the other programs in Multnomah County and in Lane County. This will fill that gap for the interim period until it can be filled in the way it really ought to be by federal funding.
I would like to make a few remarks. I'm Ed Branchfield, representing the governor in connection with this bill. The governor is very strongly supportive of the concept of legal aid, and would like to see it saved in some way. I know Steve didn't mean to mislead you a minute ago when he said the governor had approved this bill. What the governor really said was he'll hold his nose and sign it if it passes. He has the same concern that the members of this committee do, that it's kind of a taxation in reverse and so on. But I've talked to Steve and to the chairman of the Bar's Legal Aid Committee on a number of occasions. I think this is the only feasible way at this late date that we can get anything to keep legal aid in existence in these few counties that's involved until new federal funding comes in. When the E-Board 6 or 8 months ago turned down a flat grant of federal money that would be matched by private money, no state money involved at all, I don't have any real hopes that Ways and Means then will appropriate any money for this. So I would urge that the committee pass the bill. I would point out two or three little problems. Unless you've already made these amendments, I think that you have to include on page 1, line 7, a reference to a county bar association.
It was made.
It was made. And then on line 4 on page 3 with that. Well, okay. Now, there's one other problem, and I hate to bring this up. If this becomes law on passage, then the next day county clerk's going to be violating it because they aren't going to know about it. And I would hope that there'd be some effective way of putting some lead time. On the other hand, if you say July 1st, I think there's a good chance this will not become law by July 1st. Given the time schedule that now applies to bills as they go through the legislature, if you pass this out today, it'll be next week before it hits the Senate floor, and then the House would have to concur. After bills pass, I have one that passed on April 28th, and I do not as yet have the bill in the governor's office.
What's there to concur?
Well, because you, on line 7, page 2, and line 4 on page 3, there's those amendments, which, as I understand, you've adopted.
I thought they were done in the House.
Well, the first was done in the House, as a matter of fact, and it was just a mistake of the legal counsel there that it was not included. I don't know what that means in terms of concurrence. The other was merely a... I don't know what its situation was. It's a housekeeping. It doesn't change the nature of the bill at all. It just adds the proper sense.
Yeah, but when you make any amendment, doesn't it have to be repassed then?
Do you have the amendments, John?
Yes, I do.
And are they, can't they been adopted?
Yes, they have.
Madam Chair.
Senator Keefer.
You know, my big criticism of, in addition to the philosophical aspect, is the inefficiency of the thing in collecting the money. And it seems to me that it would be more efficient to collect it all in one court rather than both courts. And I would suggest we get rid of the 50 cents in the district court and increase the amount you're going to collect in the circuit court at the minimum to have more efficiency. Your filing fee in the circuit court is considerably more than the district court, and I would rather add the 50 cents if that does it. Collects the same amount or even a dollar up there, at least not. Why screw up two courts? You know?
You have the same clerk.
Pardon me?
You have the same clerk in both courts.
In the district court and the circuit court?
Yeah. We have different people, but you've got the same clerk legally.
I'm not going to support it for the reasons that I stated when you were here and testified before. I represent so many people that have such a hell of a hard time paying their attorney's fees and paying their filing fees. And I've watched the filing fees go up and up and up and up. And because they perhaps could go to legal aid, but don't want to for one reason or another, we're going to force them to carry the burden for the people that don't have any compunction about going to legal aid, and it just isn't right, and it isn't fair, and it particularly isn't fair when we only have legal aid programs operating in 5 or 6 counties or whatever, collected statewide. It's the guy up in Baker or Benton County or wherever where is paying this additional fee to finance.
Excuse me, this would not be statewide, John. It's just in the counties where the program exists. I can't argue with the rest of what you're saying.
Okay, thank you. But I see the bills that are introduced this session to cut down on attorney's fees in divorce cases and in probate cases and in various other things because the attorney's fees are good. But at the same time, we're repeatedly passing higher and higher filing fees. And I know you're in the bite of the line, but I think you've got to go head on and fight it on the merits with the Appropriations Committee.
I was just wondering, Steve, in those counties, 2 or 3 counties you say that are going to fold, has any approach been made to the county to use some of their federal revenue sharing for some
yes,
of
they
program?
Have.
They've turned you down?
No, actually, they're still working on it, mostly. For instance, Clackamas County, as I understand it,
they could survive.
Has committed a sum of money to a coalition of social services, which were cut back by the federal government, if the cities would provide matching funds. And they're working on the cities now. The hope is, of course, to take this amount of money, which would not support the whole program, and some revenue sharing money, and keep it going in the interim period.
Another question. Well, the biggest impact would be Multnomah County, probably. Is that?
Well, the biggest impact in terms of money would be Multnomah
right,
County, and that would keep it about at the same level it is.
They're going to have all $4 million or so there that they won't have to put in a county hospital. They ought to be able to fund this.
Actually, the county is going to provide for some revenue sharing to continue the East County office. There's sort of a not finalized yet, but it's a tentative commitment. This would pick up other sorts of losses in Multnomah County. But the really major impact will be in those 3 out of the 6 counties that really stand to fold entirely.
All my life in this case.
For the questions of these gentlemen?
Jim.
Thank you.
Multnomah County.
The committee's pleasure with 2219.
Well, just to watch you being killed out in the past.
Senator White, move 2219 out, do pass as amended. Discussion?
You're welcome.
Court call, roll.
Hayburn?
No.
Hayburn?
Aye.
Ivor?
No.
Hoyt?
Aye.
Madam Chair Smith?
No.
Senate
Bill 403. You're almost a commuter, guys.
Pardon me?
You're almost a commuter.
Oh,
had to see you again.
Sometime.
A couple of weeks. You had a vacation. Looked at some tag, you're more than a lot.
John called me, my case went off, and the defendant left and went in to Seattle. We had a drunk drive to be tried, but he's up in Washington, so the bondsman's looking for him. So I'm here. I appreciate your asking me back.
Judge Gillon has testified on this. Do you have any further remarks on this forum?
Well, I don't remember what I said, Madam Chairman, when I was here before. I believe that I provided the committee with an advanced draft of a report made by the National Center for State Courts, which was grew out of their visit to the state of Oregon during the early months of this year, with a specific grant to study the district court in light of Chapter 623 of 71 session laws, and also being cognizant of the amendments set forth in 403, and I hesitate to ask if this has been read. I think it's a good report. They make some evaluation of the present system in light of the necessity of making a record because of elimination of de novo, and looked at both the reporter system and the electronic possibilities, and came up with recommendations as an outgrowth of that.
Senator John Bruce.
Well, Madam Chairman, this bill was relevant prior to the passage of the bill that passed recently, which I, of course, was very much opposed to, which postponed the effective date of the court record. But inasmuch as there's already been a legislative pronouncement delaying the effective date again for 2 years, presumably to study the effect of those changes, I question the relevance of this at this time, and wonder if it isn't more appropriate to refer this to the interim committee that's going to continue to study the court of record.
Well, it's a pleasure. I think it would have some meaning to district judges and might perhaps give direction to the counties to what they should be doing right now. But whatever you think is appropriate.
Well, I strongly supported this and bled and died for the toward holding the effective date on July 1 of this year, and hoping to put these changes in there now. But the district court is not going to be a court of record for the next 2 years, unless the House kills that bill. And that being the case, what's the relevance of having appeals from the district court go to the Court of Appeals when you have when you haven't abolished the de novo provision?
Well, the only practical relevancy I could see of it, certainly, if of course 403 has an effective date of January 1, 74, but assuming that 403 is adopted with the effective date of this put off to July 1, 75, which is the end result of the amendment that's already, the bill's already passed the Senate, 593, the realistic effect of that would, it seem to me, enable the budget makers at the county level and at the state level, in light of the provisions of 403, to be making their plans budget-wise to implement that, rather than implementing 623, which would be a considerable different from both the state level, if the state system is going to be looking at taking these appeals at the Court of Appeals level, rather than the counties at the county level to the circuit courts. This, I think, this the budget time lag is certainly a necessary and is a relevant consideration.
Is it the recommendation of the District Judges Association that the de novo in the circuit court be abolished?
The abolishment of de novo as such?
Do they endorse this bill?
Yes. The District Judges Association met in November. This bill was studied, or the proposal was studied at that time, which is put the contents of which are in 403, and they adopted that as an association. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm still not satisfied that we have a solution to the dialogue here as to the relevancy of this bill. John said that since the other bill is on the way and you're not in business for 2 years, really, what can you accomplish in 2 years with this bill that you have before us?
I don't understand your question. If nothing's going to go into effect July 1 of 75 in any event, it would seem to me that the only realistic matter that I could see come to mind would be your actual budget considerations by those governmental bodies which would be funding either 623 or Chapter 623 of the present law or 403. Now, should by some chance that matter become killed in the House, then I think the counties are in, some of them at least, are in a real problem area in this area because they have not budgeted for it.
But Judge,
the impact of it.
You're assuming that the interim committee, which is going to study 593, is going to embrace or adopt the recommendations that we put in our bill that we passed in 1671. And if I understand read the vote correctly on the postponement, that is on 593, that doesn't seem to be a consensus right now in favor of the way we went.
Consensus in favor of what the contents of 623?
Yeah, making the district courts a court of record.
Even in 75.
Even in 75. I don't think they're going to do it.
Well, certainly it's our feeling and the feeling of the group, and this is not a district court made item. This has come about from the concerns of the Supreme Court and Chief Judge Schwab of the Court of Appeals and the administrator's office, that 623 had some problems that would be most difficult to implement, and that some problems would grow out of it that were not perhaps foreseen, or if they were, that some amendments ought to be thought about. Out of that concept grew Senate Bill 403. Now, to take the present workload of the district court as it is growing, and there's no reason to believe that the rate of growth is going to go down.
You don't have to sell me on that, Judge.
Certainly.
In 63, I was in the minor courts committee and got into a fight with John Holloway over this. I wanted the district courts a court of record. I haven't been appointed to a bar committee since 1963 because I fought like hell in 63 to get the bar committee to adopt a recommendation to the bar which would make the district courts a court of record. I'm right on with you. And the bill that passed in 71 was a bill that I wrote. But we've lost that bill this session.
Well, I'm aware of this, and we are all aware of it and appreciate it, and will continue to appreciate it. My point is that certainly the interim committee, it's the feeling of the district courts that this cannot be implemented in isolation. It needs to take into thought and into consideration of the whole concept of how various criminal matters, especially criminal matters, are going to be dealt with. And this is into the area of the problem of whether or not some acts which are now deemed criminal ought to be considered non-criminal and how they are dealt with. Certainly it has to take all that in. We are unalterably opposed to de novo. As a matter of principle,
absolutely,
we feel that it cannot be justified on either a financial or a judicial basis.
I agree.
Now, once you start from that premise, then I think other things can follow. And 403, it seems to me, adopts that premise and eliminate some of the problems that would happen in the 36 counties by making the present circuit court, present trial court in the state of Oregon, an additional appellate structure, which to me would simply add to the confusion of the judicial pronouncements throughout the state. This is where, in some areas, it would seem to me beneficial to supplant whatever the contingency is of the present 623 by Senate Bill 403, just for that reason, for those two reasons.
Well, there is one other consideration, as long as we're just talking about it, that if the interim committee did take a number of traffic matters out and make them civil matters, then what was left of the district court might, people of the legislature might want to consider at that point the one month.
Well, certainly it would seem to me that if we're dealing with the major traffic offenses as they're presently defined, and your major, your more serious misdemeanor, non-traffic matters, that we're dealing with a course of conduct in which the line between what is in the circuit court and what is in the district court becomes fairly narrow in many instances, and with the people with whom you're dealing. I would agree. Want to reiterate that certainly whatever the outcome is, that we will, I would hope that the district courts as such would become an integral and a real working part of any interim study when our meeting with Senator Hoyt and the committee that he so graciously provided meeting space, and we met for a few times. This was talked about at some in some manner, but
Thank you
very much, Madam Chairman.
We have a note of a phone call from Judge Beckett in Lane County. He says Lane County judges support the bill, that he thinks the effective date should be delayed to 75, and that he was not able to get away from the court. Do you want to just hold the bill and refer it to the interim committee, or wait and see what happens in the House, or what?
I'd like to ask a question regarding that note. If you delay the effective date, then you're right in the same place where you were, we are now. We couldn't put in the other, we couldn't make the circuit, the district court, the plan effective, because we didn't have time. And if you don't have some of this work done, prepared to go at the end of the 2 years from now, well, you're right behind the same eight ball we are now, aren't you? Is that part well taken? I really haven't quite got the right answer, but I'm sure to put it between John and Bob there, but.
Well,
Let's
see. Let's turn to the House Bill 2216.
Brown. We just got to break the monopoly of the press somewhere or another. These guys are always pretty impressive.
They will read it, and they will know more about it than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I
Great.
Think they will.
708, which we passed on already, conflicts with 148. And John, if you have the amendment ready.
I don't have it with me. I do have it ready, yes.
Well,
okay. Are
we looking at Senate Bill 148?
Provision.
Yeah,
initial
petition. That was a big scrap. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the law was
out. Had a case where there was a restriction in a deed in Portland that you couldn't sell it to anybody of Chinese or Oriental ancestry.
And you can't say anything. It's some cemetery, too.
House I had, they had every restriction you could imagine, including that the town would be forfeited to the community of whiskey.
Is that right?
There's all kinds of racial restrictions.
Now they're starting to
that
matter.
Had the effect of not permitting anyone of Italian ancestry to buy it.
Well, I couldn't live there.
See, I used to buy lots of Dago Red out there and sell it.
Anybody want to take action on 2166?
Move forward to do past recommendation.
Discussion.
No.
Boyd?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. I just
hate.
Keep telling people they can't do this and can't do that.
Vacancy rocks. No. We'll have somebody bring them up right away. Someone happened to misplace the other Xerox copies.
Charlotte Rose.
On that, Madam Chairman, there are some blank spaces, fees that have to be included, and we haven't got the recommendation up from the Secretary of State yet on it. We should get that from them tomorrow.
Madam Chairman, I move the technical amendments, which were reported to the subcommittee, Monday, I guess it was, which simply were Keith and I went through the bill page by page, line by line with Professor Doss, and then we comma by comma changed the commas and the punctuation, and the only, and it conforms to the uniform recommendations of the uniform commissioners. The only
check is on line page 37.
No, but I'll adopt that We'll include that, John, if you'll take that into account.
Do you want to go with this line by line, column by comma?
You didn't think I could find it.
That is in the uniform bill. That would strike the comma or the is on line 23 of page 37. Now the only question is, back toward the back, there's the uniform fee, and there's a series of sections that have a blank with respect to the uniform fee. And the subcommittee recommends...
Page 43.
Well, I guess it starts in 43 and then there's several succeeding pages. The recommendation of the subcommittee would be that John be empowered to check with the appropriate authorities, county clerks or whomsoever, and insert the appropriate figure for the uniform fee. I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe $3, maybe. But Professor Dawson wasn't able to help us particularly on that. And I'd suggest you check with Jim Desendorf or whoever. Other than that, the bill satisfies all the...
Your date.
Oh. I'd say probably January 174, but I don't have any strong... I think you're going to have to give some lead time to the...
We really only have time for the bar to have the CLE.
Yeah, I think they'll probably do that in conjunction with the bar. I would move the technical amendments plus the striking of the is on line 23 of page 37 plus January 174 as the effective date.
Discussion of the amendments.
Just a comment about the amounts. So why did you pick up the existing amounts? Don't you have in mind? Dollar amounts?
I'm just not in a position to say, Dick, because I just don't know.
I talked with Mr. Madden down in Secretary of State's office, and he's conferring with people down there to come up with amounts there. Currently the amount is $3, and there are going to have to be some changes in the language in those provisions that have blank spaces, because under existing Oregon laws there is reference to other statutes which list various fees. In the same way where you record a mortgage in a county with a county recorder, there are different fees for different situations, and so this language will probably have to be changed, simply referring to these other statutes.
We won't change the amounts, so we'll pick up the old.
No,
fees.
It'll be
that's
the old fees mind. That they want to pick
I
up.
I didn't think John said that. That's thank you.
Further discussion on the amendments. Clerk, call the roll. Dan Burns.
Aye.
Kay Burns.
Aye.
Hoyt.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman. Aye.
I move it out too fast as amended with the stipulation that said Mr. Smith.
Discussion. Clerk, call roll. Jay Burns.
Aye.
Jay
Burns.
Aye.
Ivers.
Aye.
Hoyt.
Aye.
No.
He had any trouble, I asked Mr. Hoyt to help.
Right, here's the amendment.
I'm going to get
some questions
for
you. 708, you've got some in the...
Where is 708?
It's past August.
I know, but is it in the book anyway? I can't find...
Well, you know what it is.
Yeah, I know, but I just... It's not in here.
It's in either... Here, it might be in your other book. This is a technical amendment to 708. 708 moves the amendment to
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Did you have a desk meeting and adopt the long form?
No.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, we met.
That was the day I couldn't be here. The question that I have, and I didn't get a chance to get a response back from legislative council, but if we limit the live act, do you limit the live act shows? Do you proscribe?
No, totally no live shows.
Okay, not, they're not, the proscription doesn't relate to sadomasochistic abuse.
No.
Okay, I'm moving.
Discussion of the amendments. First of all, roll. Gabriel.
Aye.
Gabriel.
Aye.
Ivory.
Aye.
Hoyt.
Smith.
Aye. Madam
Chairman.
Aye. Hoyt. Aye. Smith. Aye. Madam Chairman. Aye. 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 Aye.
Let's look at 591.
Judge Branchfield could probably give them a call back.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Where are they creating new circuit court benches?
I didn't.
Where are they?
That has not been decided.
Where are they creating circuit court benches?
I haven't heard what bill is coming out of Ways and Means yet.
You know, frankly, it seems to me a better way to go on this is if there's sort of a borderline deal whether we're going to have circuit court judges. This is going to be a temporary thing for you. It seems to me a better way to go is if they say, okay, you don't get a judge this time, you're going to get it next time, it'd be better to go ahead and create a similar judgeship this time and let him have the stuff in the interim and let him go on and then become a circuit court judge rather than create a whole new time. But this is set of bills that never get done. But it seems like it's a best book.
Was that a question or a comment or what?
Well, if I had the facts on that, I'd make a motion unless I felt it was wrong to do it.
Well, there is a motion for it.
I expect the motion.
No, I didn't hear any motion. What's the motion? The move.
I made a mover. I'm still listening. Do you want to explain the markup bill?
Well, I did the other day. I'd be glad to go over it again. But I guess you weren't here, were you, Bob?
Well, you included zoning.
Briefly, the
zoning cases that ordinarily go to the circuit court, you move over to this court now?
Yes.
Well, this court's going to be a temporary duration, isn't it?
No, the bill is not drawn that way.
Well, this, as I understood the reason for this, because of all these determinations
didn't make a motion, Madam Chairman. I don't, frankly, I don't believe in the philosophy of creating another court. I think if we want to handle these problems, and there are bills throughout this book providing for more circuit court judges, more district court judges, if that's the way we have to go, that's what I prefer. I don't want another level of the court system. I move to table.
Madam Chair, if I ask a question. The circuit courts now have jurisdiction.
That's what?
Circuit courts now have the jurisdiction. I got to have my memory refreshed here. Aren't these determinations made and written by the landlord and so forth with that process?
Well, there are some of the matters that pertain to this bill that where the original decision is now made either by the land board or by the water resources.
Well, in any event, it comes under the APA.
It is my understanding that some of these things come under the APA at the present time and some do not. It's a little bit confusing area.
Okay, well,
to me, at
the
least.
Other alternative, what I suggested before, Madam Chair, it seemed to me that we can change that so they all come under the APA. I think the Court of Appeals is asking for two additional judges this time, as I recall. Ways and Means may say no, only one, and then one left. They passed on one? I'd rather give the Court of Appeals another judge and let one circuit court judge, or I mean one Court of Appeals judge decide these things.
That'd be all right, because the big fear, I think, when we talk about this in the advice from the land board was these cases are strung around, you get a lot of differing opinions. That was the idea of having, but I would certainly go for a Court of Appeals.
The other thing is, these type of courts are the most expensive court. I think if you look at the tax court, that is the most expensive court.
I would sure prefer to do that and
put another judge in the Court of Appeals and let them say that one judge there has the authority to decide the case of this type of case. And then what they do is swap and just say, okay, you have a judge along, you're going to decide all the cases.
That's why I wouldn't have passed.
That is what Judge Schwab would like to see done.
The motion is to table. The clerk will call the roll.
Well, Madam Chairman, do we have any vehicle to take care of this? And if any other vehicle, and if not, would this work?
This is referred to upon reference to what we want amended with our suggestions to Ways and Means, and see if it's got prior reference on it.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think the questions regarding state lands, submergent submersible, are not going to come in that number to overrun any court system. If there's another person on the Court of Appeals, I think they ought to have broad latitude, as they have now, to assign judges to any area. And I agree with the expertise necessary to hear these kinds of cases, but I assume that the Court of Appeals, as well as the Supreme Court, assigns judges who have background in that particular area. I don't know that that's true. I assume they do. But I think this can be taken care of through the natural process. If there's another person on the Court of Appeals, and there has to be another one in the next session, we'll put them there. But I
all right, the motion is to table. First call roll. Abrams.
Aye.
Abrams.
Aye.
Ivern.
Aye.
Hoyt?
No.
Smith?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
No.
Bill's table.
Madam Chairman, I don't know whether to make a motion reconsideration, but what I want to do is throw this on the table. That we have this come under the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals and not any special court.
No, they don't have the facilities for handling the trial.
Well, then they can borrow some from the tent or something. But what I'm getting at is that at the present time, it's been suggested that one judge there be assigned this thing. As I understand it, present law allows a divided into two, what do you call it, John?
Panels.
Two panels. Now, if we really want one man, we have to amend the law someplace to allow him to have a one panel of one man panel.
Well, one man panel for this type of case.
Well, that's why I think that this might be the vehicle to do that.
I think if you ask the court of appeals, they would take a very dim view.
Well, they're our servants, not our mentors.
Well, I'm going to...
They just don't have the facilities.
Well, they should send the judge out to where the land is anyhow, not
they
be trying...
They can do that anyhow.
But they don't have jurisdiction of it, do they?
No.
Now, we'd have to provide legislation.
Could they assign them as a circuit court judge?
The Supreme Court justice, what he could do in all these cases, he would assign one circuit court judge in those cases, because he has the power to assign a circuit court judge in any county in the state.
Supreme Court Chief Justice,
and he could do it. And so the other way of doing it would be if we see down the road next time we're going to get a circuit court judge, appoint him now. And the Supreme Court judge could use him to go out and try all these cases.
Have Judge Wolf do it.
Well.
Pardon me? Judge Dora. Could let Judge Dora and Judge Wolf do it.
They didn't get enough signatures on there, did they?
They didn't make any.
Their joint guy's not very busy. Often they can't get them.
I could appoint Irvin Smith as
a
judge for
cases a year.
You can appoint Irvin Smith to do it.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Are we sweeping this thing under the rug, Madam Chairman?
The solutions suggested are plausible. They've hammered this thing out now for months in ways and means.
They don't have the legal competency we've got up here, you know, Madam Chairman.
Right.
Right. You come on for that.
Period.
The only way I could see it would be if you had a judge using the tax court facilities. Do you have any suggestions?
No, I hadn't thought about that possibility.
I don't think it's plausible to have a trial.
No, I don't think so either.
Are these de novo?
No.
They're not de novo.
There are some types of things though which do require trials. Some this is a rather broad ranging bill, and there are some things encompassed within it that do require trials, and some are administrative proceedings. The Court of Appeals, I think, at the present time, I'm not sure. I think it has the power to appoint a referee. I'm not sure that it does. I would think that what Senator Ivory said a while ago is correct, that if it's intended that the Court of Appeals handle any of these things on an initial basis, that or intended to have one judge assigned to decide these, that it would take special legislation.
My thought was, Mr. Chairman, that we might be able to use this bill to provide that authority.
Yeah, you could jack up the bill number and slide some other stuff under it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Does the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court have authority to assign circuit court judges to any subject matter anywhere in the state?
Yes. Which I have to add a qualifier that the judge is elected in a district, and while it's true that the Chief Justice can send him all over the state, most of them, if they're gone for very long, start getting edgy because they like to be in their own district for, you know, that's where they live for one thing. For another, they don't like to get too far away from their constituents because they're elected
in. The Chief Justice wouldn't know the case was coming up unless somebody notified them on the trial.
That's true, unless there were some way of notifying the Chief Justice that this type of case was coming up, then he wouldn't be able to do it.
How busy is the tax court? He had nothing to do.
Well, Larry Marks.
Yeah, let him handle
Marks
some land.
Not intended to convey the idea that the tax court is not busy. It's just that when you have a specialized court with one judge, lack of economy, lack of size, it costs them.
Well, the bill is tabled. If anybody has any suggestions, we'll consider it on Friday. There's a bill in the committee that creates two circuit court judgeships in Lane County and one district court judgeship. It's got a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I'd like to delete the two circuit court judgeships and leave the one district court judgeship.
So moved.
Which bill is?
Ben, John.
I don't know what it is.
Well, that's all, I guess.
Is it a Senate bill?
Yeah.
I just ran across it a while ago. What's the justification for your other district project?
Oh, it's been justified, and they've been heard in Ways and Means.
Have they?
They asked for a bill down there. The county commissioners and the circuit court judges both asked me to delete the circuit court judges.
All right.
The amendment, question on the amendment, clerk call the roll. Jay Byrne.
Aye.
Jay Byrne.
Aye.
Iger.
Aye.
Hoy.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman. Aye.
Sit it down. I move to rescind it.
Jay Byrne. Jay Byrne.
I'm sorry.
Aye.
Was that amendment voted on before? Now we're voting on the bill?
Yeah.
Aye.
Get out of here, Meeker. Come on.
He's coming up.
Aye.
Hoyt.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman. Aye. Mm-hmm. Dick, what was the bill you
The Supreme Court Justice of Missouri's land.
Well,
J.R. what?
33.
And I'd like to amend it to provide, instead of saying that all state elected judges are covered under the purview of the bill, resolution, that the language be changed to include the Supreme Court judges, the Court of Appeals judges, and the state tax court judges.
Well, we can't pass it that
way.
I'd like to come up with some amendments, Madam Chairman, which I haven't done anything on.
Could you and Dick work on and have them Friday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Make the Supreme Court judges by congressional district or something like that?
Yeah,
well, maybe
the,
four.
The problem is when they move here, then this is their residence. So something has to be put in there that they continue to run.
You got to swear to go back to
where their residence is to be considered where they were appointed from.
What I thought about is making four of them from congressional districts, like three of them run state at large, but we've got the residency problem.
We'll do that with
That's fine. Yeah. Then you wouldn't need the Missouri plan.
Right.
What did we just do? Was that on that Lane County thing?
We
abolished Lane County.
You're going to have a 4 o'clock hearing, Betty.
But no.
This good. I want to
go in 4 o'clock.
Good morning, Donnie.
Are we through?
Yeah.